Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live and Internet Voices Radio. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today I'm chatting with Angelina Laycock about her new book, Strategies for Reshaping the Workplace. Never more timely a piece of written work here. But before we dive into it, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Angelina. She is a work-life specialist and regional coordinator for the Department of Labor Women's Bureau's Workplace Flexibility Program called Flex Options. Ooh, what a great opportunity here. What a great background. Angelina, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Gail. I'm really happy to be with you this afternoon.
Well, it is my joy. We had a chance to speak a little bit earlier, and I am keenly excited about this subject matter and the material that you've written. We've talked about it, and we know that today, not just in corporate America, but in America, period, there's never been a bigger problem with work-life balance. And it is at the forefront of a lot of people's thoughts when they have a few moments to even think about it, when they're not rushing around trying to take care of business.
Yes, and, you know, it is interesting. There's always been a competing conflict between getting your work done and meeting your family needs, but it is more critical today and more obvious. And one of the reasons is probably technology. We seem to be totally connected and always connected to work by cell phones and laptops and whatever.
Yeah, can't get away from it.
And we should be encouraging people from time to time to really separate and to, you know, shut off the phone and so on, because it really is stressful. But there's a lot of competition, and workers sometimes feel if they don't stay connected that they're losing out in the sense of their own career advancements and opportunities. Somebody else will do it if they don't.
Exactly. I was going to say, even what some used to call workplace security.
Yes.
Job security.
Yes.
And how has this happened? How have we come to this?
Well, you know, we always think that technology is a blessing. You know, when I can remember when we didn't have an automatic washing machine. And boy, when that washing machine, it was just wonderful. But, you know, we wash clothes more often. And you know, we do more.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So while it seems easier, we also up the demands and up the standards for things. And I think that's... with the computer, transfer of information is so rapid, we just feel compelled to keep up all the time.
Well, we really do, and it's been mentioned in your work that all that being said, people are struggling. They are struggling to try to keep up with the work demands. They're no longer able to get everything done in a 40-hour work week. Even with all this wonderful technology, and I agree. I mean, I come from the era when the typewriter was it, and when they came out with the word processor that made things so much more easy, I thought, gosh, where was this when I really needed it?
Exactly.
So I know what you're saying. How is it, though, that with all this advancement in technology, people are having to work longer hours to keep up?
Well, I think a couple of things. You know, there are many more women in the workforce than there has ever been. We're getting very close to being 50% of the entire workforce. And I sometimes tell audiences when I'm talking to them, just picture this. Next Monday morning, every woman, whether you're a waitress or whether you're a physician, every woman stays home from work. What would happen? Because we really are a very important part of the workforce today. And so with that, what do you do with children? What do you do when you have a youngster who's sick?
Or what do you do if you're in the sandwich generation where you may also have children at home and you may also have an aging loved one at home that you're taking care of too?
Absolutely. And that's a growing problem. And what we're going to see in the next few years, and probably less than 8 or 10 years, that there will be a greater demand for elder care than there is for child care.
I totally believe that.
Because, you know, most of us, fortunately, are healthier, even though we're aging. But eventually we're going to need some help in a variety of ways, and we'll be around longer. So, you know, our children and so on will have to help, and that's an added stress when you still have dependent children at home and then have an elderly dependent. You're kind of torn sometimes.
Well, that's right. And
so when you are at work, if you're worried about something going on at home, it's hard to focus. It's hard to be fully productive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where employers need to recognize they have to be supportive of people. They don't just hire an accountant or a programmer or whatever. They hire a whole person.
Well, that's right. It used to be the philosophy was leave home at home and leave work at work. But that was never realistic.
Oh, right. And that's actually true. I remember when my husband and I started out, that was exactly the thought. No one ever was concerned. And my husband traveled a great deal, and he left on Sunday, and he came back on Friday night, and we never had one emergency when he was home. Always when he was gone.
Of course.
And so I think, you know, life being what it is, there has to be some flexibility and some concern about meeting the needs of developing children, meeting the needs of elderly, and also meeting the needs of ourselves, the workers.
Mm-hmm.
I say this often, but taking time for yourself and trying to relieve stress and to exercise and so on is not a luxury. It's an absolute essential thing.
It is. It's a necessity, isn't it?
Yes.
And, you know, we as we were speaking earlier, too, families with members of age, almost all members of age living in a household these days are having to get out and find work in order to make ends meet. We seem to be sort of evolving frighteningly closer to a kind of a two-system society, one where we have those that are very wealthy and very privileged, and then everybody else that's really struggling and working themselves to death to try to make everything work. And we also know, too, that the baby boomer generation is going to contribute to causing the age range over 60 and over 70 and over 80 to become the largest single part of our population. And many of those people are going to wind up having to work for the rest of their lives. Some have done well enough to be able to retire according to those beautiful ads that we see on TV, but the reality is that more and more of those people are going to have to work for the rest of their lives in order to make it, and then here come the young ones coming along who need to be in the workforce as well.
Right. And you know, it's an interesting dilemma. In the next 2 or 3 years, we'll probably lose about 11% of the workforce, but they're not going to retire all at once, and some of them are going to look for part-time work. Some of them are going to change careers and
mm-hmm.
do something that they have wanted to do, you know, and just haven't had the opportunity.
Right.
And so on. And so a good share of them will still be part of the workforce, and they will be needed. One of the large drugstore chains is doing something interesting. They are recruiting. There's a shortage of pharmacists, and that pharmacy industry is very concerned about this. They're not attracting people into those educational programs because they're pretty rigorous. So they're trying to attract some of those who have gone into retirements, and they actually go to senior citizen centers and try to recruit. And what they've done is they've offered retired pharmacists the opportunity to work part-time. And some of them will say, I know this is happening in the Chicago area, some of them will say, well, you know, I would do that, but January to March I go to Arizona.
Exactly.
To and they said, okay, when you go to Florida, you can work part-time there. And so they're really being, I think, quite innovative. and are looking for ways to ameliorate the situation.
Great.
But also, when people are working and active, they're still, they're happier if they're healthy and they can do it.
Of course.
Being active and involved is very important. So there's a great deal of flexibility, but certainly you wouldn't have heard of this kind of arrangement a few years back.
No. In fact, I want to hasten to add that that I've had a chance to work a little bit in the elder community myself, and there's no question that people will age better and be able to maintain more control over their lives as they age if they stay as active and involved as they possibly can, especially mentally.
Yes.
Mentally stimulating and challenging.
Yes.
Well, you know, now, with respect to this, too, Angelina, there is a Bureau of Labor Statistics estimate that in the year 2006, there will be 151 million jobs in the United States and a labor pool of only 141 million, meaning that there'll be a 10 million worker shortage here. Does that include the elder population? Does that include all those that will be coming of age? Is that a valid statistic?
It is. I know, you know, you can do funny things with numbers.
Oh, but, yes, indeed.
they've been saying this for a while, but I think it's pretty well verified. Now, as I mentioned, it appears that all of these baby boomers are not going to go out all at once. Some of them are not going to go out at all, whether by choice or whether just
necessity.
As you had mentioned earlier, maybe not feeling they could retire because of finances. But you know, there are less young people coming along, and that's the big problem. Families have certainly been smaller, and so there are just not. And then there are not enough young people who are looking at the really tough. Challenging courses in college, those that require math and science.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been, you know, several programs trying to encourage students to look at those and do as well as you can in math while you're in high school, and then consider this in college. And then, of course, the healthcare field, which is getting desperate. I mean, they are doing some interesting things. There's some hospitals who are asking nurses who have already retired to come back as a sort of mentor supervisors, where they work just part-time and they choose their own shifts, but also encourage, support, and mentor the younger people who are coming into the field.
Wow.
Yeah, so there are people who recognize this is clearly a statistic that we have to deal with, and are doing some things, but probably not nearly enough to make
right.
up for that
10 million worker shortfall?
Yes.
Wow. Well, now, you know, Angelina, one of the most important points you make in your material is the fact that there needs to be a shift in perspective and approach on the part of management. Did I characterize that well?
Yes. You know, traditionally, as I mentioned, particularly large companies, they say, well, you know, family life is something we don't want to get involved in. It's sensitive. You know, it involves emotional things. We're just concerned with work. What we're proposing is you cannot do that anymore, that you hire the whole person, and you try to make the workplace fair, equitable for everyone, whomever they are and whatever their life situation may be, and then you get that commitment from people. If people leave a company, if they've been there a while, they cost that organization a great deal of money.
Exactly.
The recruiting, the training, the loss of skills, the loss of that contact that that employer had with the client, all of that adds up to dollars. And previously, no one ever looked at that, and no one ever quantified that in numbers, but companies are doing that now. They're looking at what it costs when someone leaves and they have to hire someone new, and the cost of the person leaving, the recruiting cost of the new person, the time it takes for someone to to get up to speed in the new job adds up. And so if you can cut down your turnover rate, you're in a better position in your financially, and you're more competitive with your another company because you have people who are ongoing and know your product, know your service, know your clients.
And you know there are some big businesses that are well known for their worker friendly environment, and then of course there are others that are well known for passing on through, and it's also mentioned in your material that really the smaller entrepreneurial organizations seem to be, which blows my mind, but seem to be less worker friendly than the bigger organizations.
Couple of reasons for that. The larger organizations, of course, have more resources. For instance, we have a pharmaceutical research and development company here in our area. They have a beautiful child care center that costs $1.5 million. Well, the resources to do that sort of thing. And they know that it attracts the scientists and research people that they need. So a small company says, well, that's absurd. We couldn't possibly do that, so therefore we can't be that way. There are lots of things that small companies can do, and there are lots of things in this whole work-life arena that are low cost and no cost. In the area of childcare, they can offer their people a pre-tax deduction that would pay for their childcare needs, and save the employees some tax money, so that's a help. They can offer the resource and referral systems. Most communities have nonprofit organizations that offer childcare referrals, and they have, it's usually an internet-based program, and employers pay a small fee, and their people can go into that website and find childcare that meets their needs at very, very little cost. They can offer parenting, bound bag lunch sessions at lunchtime on parenting issues that cost really nothing. And parents can attend that. They can feel like they're getting some answers to questions they have about raising their children, but they don't have to go off some evening and be away from home and go to a class. And just being flexible, just allowing people a little bit of a flexible time in their schedule, either allowing people to come in later and work later or maybe work a little bit less than the 40-hour week, do job share. We have a number of companies in the area who are doing compressed work weeks where people work 4 10-hour days as opposed to 5 8-hour days.
Mm-hmm.
So flexibility is a really important way of supporting child care needs.
Well, and I want to interject here really quickly, Angelina, that not only is the child care issue important, but of equal importance and of growing importance is the need for elder care. Because these same employees, whether their children are still have children at home or whether their children have grown and left the home, there is, we've already acknowledged, a growing segment of the population needing assistance and flexibility regarding their obligations to take care of aging loved ones.
Right. And very often we talk about dependent care, meaning both the needs of children and the needs of the elderly.
Good.
One big lunches is how do you care for an elderly relative who has some special needs? How do you find care for them? Where do you go for help?
Right.
The bound bag lunch and those sorts of presentations are just as critical and just as valuable for those who have elderly people. And also, we are finding that employers have been very open to fairs from community resources on the elderly. And
yes, health fairs, for example, health and safety fairs.
Yes, so those agencies that serve whatever the population come together, and then employees can get answers to, you know, some of the questions that they have and some of the needs they have.
That's right, because there are resources available out there, whether it's elder care needs or our child care needs. There are resources available.
But they're hard to track down. Sometime, and particularly if you're new to this. You
know. And especially, too, if there are still many communities that may not have, for example, adult daycare centers. You know, we're very familiar with child care centers, but fortunately, more and more communities, even small ones, are beginning to develop, in association with their senior citizen center, adult daycare.
Yes.
And some of the larger organizations might consider the fact that if they do have employees that are in that, what we call the sandwich generation, where they're between young ones still at home and older ones that they're now caring for, there's a growing awareness that bringing those two groups together often benefits both the child and the aging loved one.
I know. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, it's wonderful.
And I've seen some of those centers, and they go on field trips together. They have
student
socials.
Yes.
A number of things that are really stimulating and, as you say, beneficial to both ages.
To everyone, and of course, it is not the answer for everything. There is no one answer that'll address everything satisfactorily. But that's why there are options.
That's right. That's exactly right. And going back to your comment of small companies resisting this.
Yes.
There are sort of two schools, and in my work, I have found some are. Entrepreneurs tend to be very driven.
Yes.
And so they're focused on whatever their idea, their product, their service is. And this other segment is something that they don't want to have to deal with because they're so preoccupied.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there are many, many people who have started businesses who are very have very strong family-centered values. And I'll tell you one company, both the husband and wife were in big corporations for many years, and they started a business that gave companies who wanted to do mortgages and financial transactions electronically. And mm-hmm. So they set up this system. And they started small, had a few workers, and before they knew it, they were about 30 employees.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and they needed a new facility, and they said, well, if we're going to build a new building to house this, and they said to their employees, if you had your druthers, you know, what would you like? And one of the employees, and actually the owner didn't tell me this, the employee told me this story. One of the employees said, you know what would be nice? Michigan winters can be cold. It would be so nice to come in the morning to a fireplace.
Ooh, what a great idea.
Now, come on, a fireplace at work, right? They had a fireplace. Now, it was gas, you know, it wasn't a wood burning. But they had a wonderful, large lunchroom-type area.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sofa there. They had the refrigerator, stove, all the kinds of things that people didn't have to go out to lunch. And it would be saving to people, and they had the fireplace, and it was not unusual to go in there and find somebody taking a little cat nap.
Ah.
As long as they got their work done, it was okay.
How great! That's a brilliant idea, actually. That was just brilliant.
There's something warm, inviting, and comforting, you know, about a fireplace, and you know, you think about the image of your family around the fireplace and so on. So it was a wonderful accommodation that the employer made for their employees, but it paid off. And that's really the important thing.
Right. I agree. I totally agree. Well, Angelina, I know that there are many work-life options that are low-cost and no-cost initiatives. Can you give us a little information about a couple of those?
Yes, and that's important to the smaller organizations, as I say, who don't have huge resources and yet want to find ways to create what we call a great place to work.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things they can do are on-site services. We call them SOSs, services on-site.
Okay.
For instance, pick up dry cleaning. Doesn't cost an employer anything. The companies come out, pick up the individual cleaning, to return it the next week. The
great idea.
Yes. And but it's just a time saver, a stress saver. ATM machines. A couple of small companies have put ATM machines in the workplace. And so people won't have to rush out at noon and, you know, stand in line at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Postage stamps.
Mm.
Very small thing, but have postage stamps on hand so that people can, you know, again, don't have to stand in line during your lunch hour. Other things are sort of concierge services.
Exactly.
Picking up, you know, tickets or a gift or whatever.
Maybe even grocery shopping.
Right, yes.
You know?
And most of the time for things like that, the employee pays. It isn't, you know, strictly something that the employer has to lay out money.
No.
But when you think of the time saving and the stress,
and of course, with gasoline costing so much these days, we got to factor that in too.
Yes. So those are really helpful. Neck massages, neck and upper back massages,
mm,
is very
mm-hmm.
popular, particularly people who work at computers for many hours.
Right.
People, we have a number of services here. They'll come on site, do that. Most companies will pay half, and then the employee pays half. So it's again, it's not a big outlay, but it's the kind of thing that says, you know, we care about you. We want to make life a little bit easier, and we value what you do here, and so we want to be helpful.
You know, and not we're not trying to say that compensation is unimportant. Compensation is very important because that's how people get their basic needs met. But of equal, if not more importance, is feeling of value. And so what you're talking about would certainly facilitate that kind of feeling. And with that in mind, Angelina, tell us a little bit about the key role that middle managers and supervisors play in the success of work-life balance and programs.
Yes, this is probably the area of closest to my heart. I spent many years in higher ed in experiential education, which is internships and externships and practicum, you know, encouraging students to be on the job, learning on the job, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was that there were certain work sites that we sent or placed students at that the student would come back all excited about this learning experience. And what academics do, we apply for a grant to find out what it was that was so successful in these particular sites. And we found it was the quality of supervision that the students received.
Mm.
Those supervisors who were coaches, mentors, who wanted to share their careers,
supportive
enthusiasm for their careers, didn't give students just what we call gopher jobs, but really meaningful tasks that they were given responsibilities for and so on. The learning was great, but the opportunity to develop for these students was really something to be admired. And so from that, we look now at the supervisor at the workplace. And supervisors seem to frequently be in conflict. You know, they'll say, well, look, I have to get the job done. I have to get things done on
I have to meet my numbers.
yeah, within budget and so on. Now you're asking me to be concerned about the individual needs of my team workers.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do that. And what we're convinced about is that when they do that, when they help their people meet their individual needs, life is really going to be easier. Because when you encourage teamwork, then work gets done more efficiently, and there's less need for the supervisor to sort of hover over. And when people, as I mentioned earlier, are not distracted by things that are going on at home, they're more focused and productive on their job. So that makes it easier for the middle manager or supervisor. So there are lots of pluses, but it is a transition from the old supervisor who was the director to the sort of ideal supervisor that we envision today, who's more of a coach. You know, if you think of the athletic model, the coach is he shows his athletes what to do, how to do that, lets them do it, lets them practice it, and then they come back to the huddle and talk about it. Then that's what we like to encourage supervisors to do.
Right, and there's going to have to be someone at some higher level, high level within every organization, regardless of how large or how small, who passionately believes in this and the need for this change, because from time to time, mid-level managers and supervisors are going to get frustrated and get off track and need a little motivation of their own to get back on track, to keep the larger workforce motivated.
And that's where the executive level has to look. They need to, you know, not blame the but to support them. And
exactly.
And they do that in a number of ways, and I really do talk about that a great deal in my book because I feel so strongly about this topic.
Great.
One of the ways is provide training to their supervisors, perhaps in conflict resolution, very important, in communication. What we have now are multi-layered generation workforces, and the boomers talk a different language than the generation X and Y.
Yes, they do.
You know, and so they have to learn what each other means. And,
right.
Also, what motivates one group as opposed to another.
Right.
And so, again, the supervisors need that kind of help and support.
Yes, Angelina, excuse me, darling, but, you know, we are just about out of time here, and I don't want to run out before the audience knows where they can find the book. There's so much. We could go on about this for a long time, and I wish we could. But please tell the audience where they can find your book.
Oh, yes. Well, it's on Amazon.com.
Great.
It's at World at Work, www.worldatwork.org.
Okay.
And also www.backoftheroom.com.
Great. Wonderful.
So it's readily available. And,
great.
I think it's a much more applied, practical look at work-life issues. There are many books out there on work-life.
Well, there are.
Very good.
And yours sounds like it'll be very timely and very well received. And Angelina, I do want to thank you for taking time to talk with us today. I want everyone to know out there that this interview will be posted on her page, Angelina Laycock, on InsideScoopLive.com, and that ReaderViews.com will also have a link to that interview, as well as will the websites that Angelina mentioned earlier in this interview. I want to encourage everyone out there to go to all these websites and take a look and take a listen and consider Angelina's book for your own library, for your supervisor, for your employees, for your employers as a gift. I can see a wealth of need for this. Angelina, thank you again for joining us today.
It was my pleasure, Gail.
Great. And audience, thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.